WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg, up next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and today marks the monthly visit of Nan Calvert from Root Pike Wynn, who joins us once a month to offer up an important topic related to the environment, to the natural world around us, and to its well-being. And often when we have our conversations with Nan, it's about very well-traveled territory, topics that we all know a whole lot about, but always are excited to learn more about. But on today's program, we're going to be talking about an issue, a concern that's actually very new to Nan Calvert herself and will be very new to most of the rest of us as well. First, and we'll introduce our two guests in just a moment. So, Nan, explain to our listeners just how recently you came to understand the existence of something called a polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs.
That's very good, Greg. I think it was about the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. I was given the opportunity to learn more about this sort of thing. And up until that time, I had no idea the impact that polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, have on the environment, specifically on our watersheds. And so there are a lot of people out there who are working on this thing, fortunately, who know a whole lot about it and why it's important for us to understand what these are, understand the far-reaching impact that they have, and what can be done about it. And fortunately, we have Clean Wisconsin, who's working very hard on this issue and getting people in Wisconsin, especially our Lake Michigan communities, to think about this, consider it, focus on it, and do something about it.
And so we are really happy to have with us two different representatives of Clean Wisconsin. First of all, in our studio, we have with us John Richards, who is a Milwaukee-based attorney and a legal consultant for Clean Wisconsin. We appreciate you making the trip down to join us.
Thanks, Greg. Great to be here.
And over the telephone, we're happy to be speaking with Paul Mathewson, who is a staff scientist for Clean Wisconsin. Are you speaking to us from Madison?
Yep, I'm in Madison. Happy to be on the line.
Great. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate this very, very much. Ahead of us talking about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, let's just find out a little bit about the overarching work of Clean Wisconsin. John Richards, let's begin with you, and Paul, feel free to join in to expand on the answer. What is Clean Wisconsin and what's it all about?
Sure. Well, Clean Wisconsin is a statewide advocacy group that is trying to make Wisconsin cleaner and greener. It's been around since 1970. A lot of people know the organization from its former name as Wisconsin's Environmental Decade. It was actually started on Earth Day a long, long time ago. And then they figured out that it's going to take more than 10 years to clean the environment. So they changed the name to Clean Wisconsin. And Clean Wisconsin is unique among environmental organizations or advocacy groups in that we have in-house scientists, and Paul Mathewson on the line is leading that group. And I tell you, it makes a huge difference when we go into communities around Wisconsin and we can bring science to bear to the discussion and talk about these issues with some intelligence and some background and kind of lead people to show what's really happening out there based on good science and data. And here in Racine and Kenosha, Paul and his team have actually conducted work to see what's happening with the waterways and PAHs. And Paul maybe can talk about that a little bit. But that's one of the really exciting things that Clean Wisconsin is able to bring into any discussion, is that they look at the science, and oftentimes science that's been done in the community that we're talking to. Another thing that I really like about Clean Wisconsin is that we work with local communities. Very often environmental groups just work with the state or national government, and that's certainly important to do, and Clean Wisconsin does that too. But Clean Wisconsin has a special focus on working with local communities to make sure that we are passing ordinances that make sense for the environment and that we're being as clean as possible. You know, many times local governments are strapped for money. They don't have the time to or the manpower to look into various environmental issues, not because there are only so many hours in a day and so many people around to do things. And so Clean Wisconsin can come in with good science and sensible solutions. And with this particular campaign, one of the things that we've seen is that when people see the evidence of what's going on in their community, how we can deal with it sensibly, and really the harm that would come about if we don't deal with it, we are passing these ordinances by unanimous votes all around Wisconsin in all different types of communities, large towns, small towns, places that lean right on the political spectrum, places that lean left on the political spectrum. We're getting the same response in community after community because when people see the evidence, it's compelling and they want to act, and we are excited to work with them to make their community as clean as it can possibly be.
And what tends to be your primary responsibility as a legal consultant for Clean Wisconsin? What is the nature of the expertise that you bring to bear?
Well, I bring in policy expertise, and I work with the city attorneys in the different communities where we go to make sure we draft ordinances that make sense for the environment and really lead the charge to work with policymakers to suggest ideas on how we can move forward in sensible ways. So in this particular campaign where we're talking about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, we're working with city governments and mayors and county officials to first of all introduce them to this problem and talk about how they can address it in a sensible way.
Very good. Paul Mathewson again is on the line, a staff scientist for Clean Wisconsin. Explain a little bit more about the kind of work that you and your colleagues do at Clean Wisconsin. I mean, specifically, the scientists like yourself. What is kind of the nature of what you do and the sorts of issues that you tackle?
Yeah, so a lot of my role here in the science department role is just to make sure that any kind of actions and positions that Clean Wisconsin takes are grounded in actual science, and there's a reason for taking them, and there's good evidence to support taking action on stuff, because, you know, we don't want to just take action for taking action's sake if it's not going to make a difference, if it's not a real issue. And so any campaign that we're working on here at Clean Wisconsin, as John mentioned, we work on a variety of issues, water-based, air-based, you know, all around the state. And so it's my work is a lot of going through the scientific research that's been done on any topic, talking to individual experts who've done research on that, and even sometimes conduct their own research as needed to fill in gaps in terms of information at a local level. So that's a lot of what I do.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, today is the monthly visit of Nan Calvert to the morning show, and she has brought with her today two representatives of Clean Wisconsin. In our studios is John Richards, a Milwaukee-based attorney who is a legal consultant for Clean Wisconsin, and joining us on the telephone, we were just hearing the voice of Paul Mathewson, who is one of the staff scientists for Clean Wisconsin. So we want to turn our attention very specifically to the matter at hand, which is such a urgent cause for concern for Clean Wisconsin, namely this thing called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs. And it's really scary to think about something that most of us have never heard of and yet is all around us and might really be a part of our daily lives, and we're not even aware of it. How long have these PAHs been around?
Well, let me first, before we get into that, let me just put this into some context. Because when I got involved with this, I had no idea what pHs were. I'd never heard of them before in my life. And as you look into this, the way I think of it is pHs are like PCBs and DDTs. And that's a good way to think about it. Hmm. When PCBs and DDTs first came into the picture, everyone thought they were great. They were widely used. And it took us a generation or two to figure out that they're actually very, very harmful. And then we had to formulate a response to it. And now we're seeing, you know, their dramatic, dramatic reduction in PCBs and DDTs in the environment. We're spending billions and billions of dollars to clean up PCBs from our waterways because we understand how bad they are. PAHs are in that same category. They're the same type of pollutant in that they are a complex compound that stays in the environment that are incredibly harmful. For example, exposure to PAHs increases cancer risk by 14 times for children. They create massive problems for aquatic life and human life. And so there are PAHs are really, really bad, and we are now starting to understand how bad they are. And the good news is that we know what introduces PAHs into the environment, and that is a product called coal tar sealant, which is something that you use to put a black surface on a driveway or a parking lot. And we find all around the country that by far and away, coal tar sealant is the leading contributor to PAHs in the environment. And so that leads to our policy response, which is let's ban the sale and use of coal tar sealant. And that will do a great job to keep PAHs out of the environment. And that's what we're asking communities around Wisconsin to do. And we're currently active with the city of Racine, where Mayor Corey Mason has been a great friend on this issue and is urging Racine to move forward on this issue. Alderwoman Natalia Taft has agreed to author the ordinance, and it is being drafted as we speak. So I expect that we're going to be seeing some action on that in Racine this summer. But we're going to be going to communities in the Root Pike watershed to really focus on this issue in this watershed. We are working with communities up and down the Lake Michigan coastline. We're currently working on an ordinance in Algoma, which is east of Green Bay, north of Manitowoc. The most recent places to adopt this ordinance have been the city of Manitowoc and the city of Sheboygan. Both of those communities passed the ordinance by a unanimous vote. And so we are working with communities all up and down the Lake Michigan coastline to make sure that certainly the Lake Michigan communities are banning this product. And so I certainly will be going into the city of Kenosha also.
Very good. Paul Mathewson, help us understand what these polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons actually are. I mean, what kind of a substance are we talking about, and what makes it so harmful? What about it makes it so dangerous to human life and animal life alike?
Yeah, so PAHs are a class of compounds. There's a couple hundred different types of them. A number of them have been studied well enough to know their toxic effects on humans and wildlife. 16 of them are on the U.S. EPA priority pollutant list due to their toxicity to humans and aquatic life. And so those are ones that have been well studied. More and more information is coming out all the time, and so they're continually updating the list. And I've heard that EPA will be expanding the list of expanding from 16 to include a few more. Now that they know more about them. Of those 16, seven of them, I believe, are known human carcinogens. And again, that number is increasing as we learn more about different individual compounds. You know, since there's so many of them, it's impossible to know what they all do at once. You know, it takes time to study each one individually. So, so that's what PAHs are generally. So they're known carcinogens. They also have reproductive effects. There's studies looking at exposure, prenatal exposure, as well as exposure to young kids, and looking at outcomes in terms of development later on, finding reduced performance on IQ tests, things like that, reproductive effects like nervous system development, prenatal effects. So you have carcinogenic effects as well as reproductive developmental effects in humans. And so, as John mentioned, yeah, they're just nasty compounds we want to minimize our exposure to. Right. Where they come from is there's a variety of sources of them. Anytime you're burning organic matter, you're going to generate some level of PAHs, and so they are kind of ubiquitous in the environment at a certain level. You know, like wildfires will produce them, volcanoes will produce them. But in an urban human environment, humans are the primary source of them with, you know, all of our combustion engines. And so up until a few years back, up until the early 2000s, it was generally considered, thought that the main source of PAHs in the environment was just kind of the ambient human environment with our cars, with our industrial processes. But then the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, began doing some research in Austin, Texas, and identified these coal tar-based sealants as a potential source of PAHs in the environment because they were investigating hot spots of PAHs in the waterways in Austin, Texas, and they were seeing these sealed parking lots upstream of where they're finding high levels of PAHs. And so they looked at the concentration of PAHs in coal tar-based sealants versus other common sources in the environment. So like, for example, tire particles will have about 90 parts per million PAHs. Diesel, vehicle emissions will be around 200 to 300 parts per million. Used motor oil will be 400 parts per million. But these coal tar-based sealants are 70,000 parts per million, up to over even 200,000 parts per million, depending on the actual product itself. And so you have this one source that is that's orders of magnitude more concentrated in PAHs that are just being spread out in the environment and left to be able to be dispersed into the environment. And so that's where this particular topic came to light.
And one of the things that we're seeing around the country is that as the PCB and DDT levels in waterways are going down, the PAH levels in waterways around the country are going up. Mm. It is becoming a big problem that we're now starting to get our arms around. In Minnesota, they have an interesting thing going on there where a number of communities are being required to move their soil out of their catch basins for rainwater and for stormwater because they're contaminated with PAHs, and it's costing them an arm and a leg to move that. It's gotten to be so bad that several communities have banded together and have sued the manufacturers of coal tar sealant because they are having to pay through the nose to remove this sediment that's now contaminated because of this particular product. And as Paul mentioned, we know that the main culprit here is coal tar sealant. Once in a while, people will try to suggest that this comes from cooking hamburgers on the grill or from tire particles. And, you know, that just isn't true. The what comes from grills or from tires is maybe 2% of the problem. 90% of the problem comes from coal tar sealant. So let's deal with the thing that's causing 90% of the problem.
Right, absolutely. And just to be clear, we spent a lot of time in this conversation talking about these PAHs going into our water because other things create PAHs. Is this something that also potentially goes into the air, or is that not as serious an environmental issue?
Paul?
Yep. So so I can just talk generally. So when you put down the sealant, you know, it all looks great when it's first applied. Your driveway, your parking lot looks nice and black. But over time, it weathers. And, you know, as cars go over, snowplows abrade it, you know, rain, all that stuff. It weathers over time. And so those particles with, you know, 70,000 parts per million of PAHs are being shed off that parking lot, and they get washed into waterways, they get blown into homes, tracked all around the city or the region where they are. And so when you're talking about human exposure, so one thing to know about PAHs is due to their chemistry, they're not going to dissolve in water very readily, so they're not going to be a drinking water concern. Where the public health concern comes in is when you have little kids around, and, you know, they're on the ground, they're playing toys, putting things in their mouth. And so a study at Baylor University, they looked at the levels of PAHs in the house dust in homes next to coal tar sealed driveways, compared it to the house dust in homes next to unsealed driveways or driveways that are sealed with alternate products that don't have the same levels of pHs. And they found that the house dust next to the coal tar sealed driveways had 25 times greater levels of pHs. And similarly, in the front yards next to the driveways, those yards had 10 to 100 times higher pHs compared to places that have unsealed driveways. And so when you do kind of risk assessments, you know, there are standard values you use for incidental ingestion of dust and dirt as kids are playing around and just exploring the world naturally as they do. And comparing those pH concentrations, they find an increased risk of 14 times increased cancer risk for kids living next to these areas where coal tar-based sealants are used compared to where other sealants or unsealed driveways are. So that's where the human risk comes in.
Wow.
And the American Medical Association, along with Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, have both been good allies in this fight because they see the human health impacts of coal tar sealant and PAHs, and they are working with us to go into communities to ban this product. As it relates to Racine, Paul and his team did some research on several locations in Racine and found that there were at least five places that had contamination above the threshold effects concentration for PAHs in Racine, at Colbert Park, at the Root River south of West 6th Street, at the Root River pathway off Horlick Park Drive, and at Colonial Park. Also at the public boat launch at Horlick Dam, there was significant contamination. And so, Paul, could you talk about your work in Racine a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Just to back up slightly from there, as I mentioned, this issue was first identified by the USGS when they were working in Austin, Texas, but they had since expanded their work and found the same thing over and over in various cities throughout the U.S. Most recently, what really got our attention was when they did a study in Milwaukee, in greater Milwaukee area, and they sampled about 40 different waterways, took samples from 40 different places in various waterways in the greater Milwaukee area, and they found through various means of testing, they could trace back that over three-quarters of the pHs in those waterways are coming from coal tar-based sealants. And so we at Clean Wisconsin were like, okay, that's very interesting. You know, we understand that Milwaukee is the largest urban center in the state, and so we wanted just to see if this was the case in smaller cities that aren't quite as developed or if it's just a big city issue. And so we did some sampling initially in three cities, Eau Claire, Stevens Point, and the Racine area, as John mentioned. And so what we've done is we sampled along the Root River from public access points, from rural areas up by the Milwaukee border all the way down through downtown Racine. And we used the exact same methods that USGS did, the same sampling, the same analytics. And as John mentioned, at several of the sites, especially as you get to downtown Racine, the levels of pHs rise above what is known as the threshold effects concentration, and that's the level at which you can start to see effects on aquatic life. And so you can start, you know, that's a good benchmark to know if you're having contamination issues. And at many of those sites, coal tar-based sealants, using, again, the same methods that USGS did, were identified as the primary source in the Root River at those sample sites.
So, for instance, when we're talking about effects on aquatic life, what kind of effects are we talking about? Are we talking about diminished populations or other ways in which aquatic life is adversely affected?
Yep. Both of those. So the way that pHs do their chemistry, they basically bind in the soil and bind to sediment particles, and so they accumulate in the sediment of the river bottoms or the lake bottoms or wherever they happen to be. And as John mentioned, they are in the class of persistent organic pollutants, similar to DDT and PCBs, which means that they don't break down very easily. And so they just build up in the environment and build up in that sediment. So any aquatic life that's spending much time near the bottom will be exposed to it. And so most notably, studies have found that invertebrates, little insects and things that kind of form the basis of the food chain that spend a lot of time in that sediment, they are can be killed off by these pHs. So they find reduced species diversity, reduced numbers of individuals, and so they're, you know, those, that population is being affected. That forms the basis of the food chain. But then also anything, like, you know, any kind of fish that spends time near the bottom, amphibians, if they spend time near that bottom, they can develop lesions, tumors, and things like that. And so I remember there was a couple years back, they did a study of fish in some Milwaukee area rivers, and they were finding particularly high levels of lesions and things like that. And they didn't actually go back to figure out where it's coming from, but they proposed that pHs are a potential source of that. So that's just another example of how it affects wildlife.
Wow. Can you take us into kind of the biology of why a living being is so adversely affected by pHs? I mean, what does it do inside the body of a fish or the inside of the body of a human child? I mean, what specifically is going on that creates these adverse reactions?
Yeah, and to my understanding, I'm not sure they actually know the mechanism of how it actually works.
Wow.
It gets into the biochemistry. When you have this foreign chemical, it will interfere with the normal cellular actions. I don't know if they know precisely how it's operating, but they just know that, you know, when you are exposed, when you have that body burden of it, it does affect your normal cellular activities, and you can get these issues coming up.
Wow.
Can we talk about some of the alternatives that are available to coal tar sealant? Because there are a number of people who still want to put a sealant on their driveway or parking lot, and that's fine. There are a number of alternative products that are out there that contain 1,000 times fewer PAHs than coal tar sealant. Matter of fact, most of the big box retailers, including Home Depot and Lowe's, have discontinued carrying coal tar sealant because they recognize how bad it is for the environment. As we've been going into communities and looking at the various hardware stores, like the mom and pop hardware store in downtown Algoma, they don't carry PAHs anymore either, and so our coal tar sealant anymore either, because they see what a big problem it is for the environment. And so these are becoming harder and harder to buy, but with the ordinances that we're encouraging communities to pass, we are trying to make it impossible to buy in these various communities because it is so bad for the environment, and there are so many alternatives that are available that cost about the same and work as well or better. We've been working with some sealant contractors on this issue, and from their experience, as you're applying this product, it is a horrible thing to apply. It hurts your skin and your eyes, and it's really, really harmful for the person applying it. But they also tell me that it really degrades the asphalt under the seal. So these alternative products actually turn out to be a better product in the long run, but they are comparable in quality, comparable in price, widely available, and there really is a good reason to use it. We're working with various counties around Wisconsin to urge them to stop using coal tar sealant on their products. So on their projects. The most recent county to pass and a resolution like that was Kewaunee County. We've already passed that resolution in Brown County. I expect we'll be bringing that to Racine and Kenosha County for their consideration. But we want to make sure that counties and governments in general are not using this project on their own products. And you'd hate to see, for example, a school district requiring people to use coal tar sealant on their projects. And I've heard of that in communities in Wisconsin. And so as we talk to people about this, we want to make sure that the last thing we do is require the use of a product that's going to increase the risk to cancer, hurt human health, hurt the environment, and to make sure that people are doing the right thing by using alternative products. And by far and away, when we go into communities of all sizes and counties too, they have stopped using coal tar sealants a long time ago because people who do this for a living know how bad it is. What we're finding that the people who use the product often are small jobbers who come around communities often towing a bucket of sealant behind their truck. They come to your door and they'll say, we'll seal your driveway for, you know, a little bit of money, and they slop it on and they're on their way. And they use that sealant often because it's watered down. It's easy to water down. And so you're getting an inferior product that's been watered down. They buy it from wholesalers. So that is the way that we are hearing anecdotally how it's coming into the marketplace, at least in some communities. That might not be true everywhere, but certainly we've heard it in many communities around Wisconsin.
So it isn't so much that a Joe Blow citizen is apt to go into their hardware store looking for coal tar sealant. It's more that it's more likely that when you hire somebody to seal your driveway, it's very possible that they might still be utilizing a product like this.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what we're finding when people are doing their projects. Typically, they go to our hardware store. The hardware store won't even carry the product. The way this comes into the market is through wholesalers. And so, but we want to make sure that every retailer is aware of this and stops carrying it. I'm sure there are a few places in Wisconsin that still sell this in the hardware store. It's available to the public. But a lot of people just don't know not to buy it. And so we want to make sure that people at least know what they're doing and can make a knowledgeable choice. And make sure that we stop this pollutant from going into the environment when there are alternatives readily available.
Right. Once it has, maybe this is a question for you, Mr. Mathewson, once this has been applied to a driveway or, God forbid, a playground or a parking lot, is there anything that can be done in after the fact in terms of removing this or alleviating some of its more harmful effects?
Yeah, so I know some places, they like in Austin, Texas, or in Washington, D.C. area where they've been doing a lot of work, there are folks who can go around and do a process called shot blasting. They can take it up and once it's been put down. Unfortunately, I've talked to Dane County, because Dane County's had a ban for a while, and they've been looking around, and they don't know anyone in the region that does that. Similarly, in Minnesota has banned it at a state level since 2011. They're not aware of anyone who can do that in there. And so the way that it's mostly done is either some communities will require them to cover it with an alternative sealant just to keep it capped and kind of encapsulated. Hmm. Otherwise, it's just, unfortunately, it's kind of a lost cause. After a few years, it'll wear off. And so, you know, this kind of effort is, you know, it's looking long term. It's like, we can't fix what's done now, but we can make a cleaner environment in the future. So unfortunately, anything that happens right now, we're aware of not much you can do about it, but it's just forward looking,
right,
cleaning things up.
Nan, you had mentioned something before we went on the air about one property of PAHs that's especially concerning. It has something to do with the fact that it tends not to disperse, or you're saying,
right,
something to that effect. What were you saying?
And certainly Paul can correct me on this. But so it binds with the sediment particles near the bottom of our waterways. It's heavier than those particles by and large. So even when the particles are disturbed and they float away, the PAHs tend to stay where they are. And so that's why they accumulate, you know, in an area. Is that essentially correct, Paul?
Yeah. And so, they just bind to that sediment. And so as far as the studies that we've seen, it doesn't flow too far away from the actual source of where it was coming from originally. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a parking lot or a driveway that's been sealed with it near a waterway, you know, you'll see elevated levels within about half, two-thirds of a mile downstream of that, but then it peters out after that. You can have, like, during big rainstorms, big flood events, that sediment, you know, could get all, with enough pressure, get up and move things, mm-hmm, around. But generally, yeah, as Nan mentioned, it just kind of hangs out in the sediment near where it entered.
And keeps doing its harm.
Right.
Yep. And it just, yeah.
So, and Greg and I were talking before we went on air about the amount of flooding we have seen everywhere. You know, we've had flooding in Wisconsin. We've had flooding in the Midwest. And Paul was just mentioning, you know, if you have enough pressure, if you have a lot of floodwaters, it's going to disturb those things and they're going to move downstream. And then add on the other contaminants that are picked up by floodwaters that contribute to the degradation of our waterways. And it seems like an insurmountable problem, but it isn't. There are so many things that we can do to make things better, and that's why Clean Wisconsin and municipalities within Wisconsin are working on this problem. And I just want to reiterate that there are alternatives to these. They're petroleum asphalt-based sealants, and that's the kind of thing that you want to look for when you're hiring a contractor, especially.
And I just want to pick up on a point that Nan just mentioned, is that in terms of making a difference, there is evidence that banning the use of these products does make a difference. Austin, Texas was the first place to ban them back in 2006, and they did a follow-up study 8 years later, because it takes a little bit of time for sediment to accumulate to see how things change. And 8 years later, they resampled a bunch of waterways in the area, and they found a greater than 50% reduction in PAHs. And they attribute that directly to the passing of their ordinance. And so that is good evidence that actually taking action on this issue, it kind of bears out the theory. You know, everything points to coal tar-based sealants as being a primary source. This is good evidence, you know, supporting that, showing that if you take action on it, you can see a reduction in the pHs in the environment. And so far, that's the only place that's had an ordinance in place long enough to do a follow-up study. I understand that the USGS is currently working on a follow-up study in Dane County. We won't have those results for another year or so. But as far as we know, it looks like taking action actually does make a difference based on the studies out there.
Hey, Paul, I bet you there are some people listening who are wondering if PAHs are on their driveway or in a parking lot near them. Can you tell them how to test for that?
Yeah, so once you apply a sealant, you don't know if it's a coal tar-based or an asphalt-based, unless if you're in the industry, you can tell. But for a normal person, it looks black. You can't really tell a difference. And so there has been a very simple screening test developed by the folks in Austin again. Again, that's where most of the research has been done. And it's very simple. You get some paint thinner, and you put a little you scrape up a little bit of the sealant, and you stick it in the paint thinner. And if it dissolves, then it's an asphalt-based or a latex one. I should mention that the asphalt-based sealants, those are widely available. Those do have some pHs, but as John mentioned, thousands of times fewer. There are also sealants out there that have no pHs. Those are acrylic or latex-based sealants. And so either any of those alternatives, if you put them in the paint thinner, they will dissolve. If it's a coal tar-based one, it'll just maintain its form and just kind of it'll color the paint thinner a little bit, but it'll stay whole in it. So it's a very simple screening test.
John Richards, what can you tell us about the manufacturers who are responsible for creating this in the first place, and to what extent has Clean Wisconsin and or other environmentalists gone after them to try to discourage them from creating this product in the first place?
Well, that's a really good question. And our focus is really on communities and hopefully eventually the state to work with people to ban these products from being used. We really haven't talked about a strategy where we'd go after them in court. What we're seeing is that communities around the country, starting with these communities in Minnesota, are going after those manufacturers because they're having to pay so much money for cleanup. And I expect you're going to see that continue as environmental regulators become more familiar with PAHs, are testing for it more often, are requiring communities to have expensive cleanup projects. These communities are going to ask, well, why are we in this position and who's responsible for this? And I think you're going to see a number of communities following the leads of these communities in Minnesota. Our strategy is to go through community by community to, first of all, introduce people to the idea of banning coal tar sealants and explaining why PAHs are so bad for the environment and the simple steps they can take as an environment and as a person to make sure that these things don't go into the environment. And that's what we're focusing on now.
Right. No, I understand that, and I think that's good work to do. It just seems to me that at some point it would be nice, it would be helpful if Company X that creates this terribly dangerous product was made aware, or maybe made more aware than they are right now, of the harmful nature of this product. I suspect that, on the other hand, the fact that fewer and fewer communities are buying these products in the first place, that in itself might be a point of discouragement for them to continue to manufacture these products.
Well, that's right. That's one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to get critical mass in different parts of the state to kind of create the free market approach to banning these products, where most people know if a law is in place, they'll want to follow it. And the word will get out among coal tar sealant applicators that you can't use coal tar in this entire area. I hear that's what's happened in Dane County, as they've had a ban in place for about a decade. And the word's out that you can't apply it, and the sealant applicators kind of keep track of their competitors. And if they hear or smell someone who is applying this product that you can easily detect, then they report them. And so the free market works, and it works to prevent this from happening. And our goal is to make sure that we educate people about what's happening here and that we have the steps in place in the communities to stop it from being applied.
Hmm. What is
and
the...
Then if I can provide a little bit of context into how coal tar gets into these sealants in the first place, because coal tar is a byproduct of coking steel for the steel industry. And so, you know, in the Ohio, Pennsylvania areas, that upper Midwest area is where a lot of the coal tar is coming from in the first place. And so you see this issue mostly east of the Rockies. West of the Rockies, you don't really see this issue because they don't really use coal tar-based sealants. And so coal tar itself is a known carcinogen, a known hazardous product. Unfortunately, in the federal rule regulating hazardous products, RCRA, there's a specific exemption for coal tar to be used quote-unquote beneficially in things such as coal tar-based sealants. And so folks know how bad coal tar is. And now coal tar on its own is about 50% PAHs by weight. So it's known to be a bad thing. It's just the federal rule, through the various machinations of lobbying and all that stuff, they have an exemption to allow it to be used in products like this.
Wow.
But as a result, we have something going into our environment that's akin to PCBs and DDTs, and it's just one of those oversights that's happened over time in our society, and we're trying to change that. But we should always keep in mind that this is a preventable problem in the way that applying PCBs and DDTs was a preventable problem, and so that's one of the things that we have to address.
Paul, if let's say a homeowner discovers that their driveway has been sealed with a coal tar-based sealant in the past, if the homeowner applied a petroleum asphalt-based or an acrylic latex-based sealant over that, would it effectively seal it in?
To the extent that of its lifetime, mm-hmm. which, you know, any sealant is, depending on its makeup, is warranted for 1 to 5 years, mm-hmm. or up to 10 years. And so unfortunately, once it's there, it does protect it, but then you have to be continually maintaining that, continually adding things on, making sure it's always protected. Mm-hmm. One thing we would recommend for folks who might have had coal tar based sealants is just make sure you're diligent about vacuuming dust and taking off shoes before you go into your house. That would minimize the tracking in of any wayward contamination off the driveway, mm. and help reduce that exposure risk to young kids.
John Richards, what is the timeline for your work in Racine in terms of an ordinance being passed? Has a potential ordinance already been drawn up?
Well, we've given them a sample ordinance, and Mayor Corey Mason has given that to the city attorney to draft, so it goes by Racine's drafting conventions. Alderwoman Natalia Taft has agreed to author it and shepherd it through the Racine Common Council. The new environmental coordinator or sustainability coordinator for Racine, Kara Pratt, has been very active in working with us. And so we have a good head of steam going into Racine. Obviously, the Root Pike Watershed, Nan's group, and other citizens are going to be involved. So we are hoping to pass something in Racine this summer. And so a lot of it depends on what kind of reaction we get from the community. But our goal is to work as efficiently as possible and as quickly as possible to pass a ban this summer.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Paul Mathewson, before we go, I can give you 1 minute to talk about any other important issues that Clean Wisconsin is currently working on.
Oh, boy. 1 minute.
1 minute. I mean it.
Oh, boy. A lot of our focus right now is kind of harnessing Governor Evers' year of clean drinking water. And so that's kind of what a lot of our focus is. There's that study in Southwest Wisconsin showing that a good number of wells are contaminated by nitrates and bacteria. And so we're working hard to clean those up and make sure that folks are always have access to clean drinking water. We're also following and watching how legislation and regulation of another nasty compound, also started with PFAS, you might have heard of, those compounds, there's a lot of work and interest in those, and so we're working hard on that. Working hard on stormwater controls, as Nan mentioned, there's a lot of increased flooding in the area, in the state, in the region, due to climate change, and so we're doing a lot of work to help communities install green infrastructure to help control all that stormwater. So, yeah, we're all over the place. We do a lot of stuff.
Very good. Paul Mathewson is a Madison-based staff scientist for Clean Wisconsin. We appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your good work.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. It was fun talking.
Great. Thank you again. John Richards, if people want to contact Clean Wisconsin, how should they do it?
Well, you can go to our website, cleanwisconsin.org. That's probably the best way to do it. And you can contact any number of people to get involved or write an email to get involved with this campaign. Nan Culvert here in the Ruth Rupert Watershed would be a good person to talk to. And she's not a member of Clean Wisconsin, but certainly as an ally. And we work with local allies around the state, and that's how we make a difference.
Excellent. Very good. John Richards, legal consultant for Clean Wisconsin. Great to have you in our studio today. Thank you so
much.
Great
to be here.
All right, Nan Culvert, finish up with some calendar events, if you would.
Oh, exciting calendar. All of the summer camps are going on now. Most of them are filled. They have waiting lists, so, don't give up. You can always call and get on a waiting list. Aside from that, Riverbend has something really good going on. All summer into September, you can learn to canoe or kayak. If you've never done that before, or you don't really feel like you have the skills to get you safely out on the water, they have American Canoe Association certified paddling instructors, and they'll help you make the most of your time there. You can sign up for a weekend class for ages 14 through adulthood, or you can sign kids from 10 to 15 years of age, for four-day canoe and kayak camps. They're both of those approaches are held all the way into the first week of September. All you have to do is call Riverbend to sign up, or you can email at info@riverbendracine.org to register. I'd like to register. The Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is two interesting things going on. One is their summer solstice celebration, Friday, June 21st, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. You'll get together for a lively celebration of the start of summer and the longest day of the year. Bring something delicious to pass and share. You don't have to reserve your place. Just come as you are, and it's free, but donations are accepted. Then, the farm-to-table dinner at at Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. This is their third annual event. You'll have appetizers and cocktails while touring the Eco Justice Farm. Then you'll settle in near the gardens for a multi-course meal prepared by chefs from some of Racine's finest restaurants, like Sebastian's, Old Madrid, Blue Bear, The Maple Table, Roberta, and Butcher and Barrel. Tickets are $100 per person. This is a fundraiser. And since wine and cocktails will be served, it's an adult-only event. Registration is required. Go to the website, ecojusticecenter.org, click on the event, reserve your place, and then send in your payment. It's really fun. It fills up really fast. So if you want to go, get your stuff in there.
Excellent. Nan Culvert, thank you for creating yet another wonderful program. We'll see you in July.
Yes, we'll see you in July.
Very good. I'm Gregory Berg. And tomorrow on the morning show, Richard Goldstein, author of Another Little Piece of My Heart, My Life of Rock and Revolution in the 60s. Goldstein was a leading music critic and journalist in the late 1960s and early 70s. And his book is about his encounters with such important figures as Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin. And on Thursday, Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Michael Chabon and his book Manhood for Amateurs, The Pleasures and Regrets of a Husband, Father, and Son. And on Friday, Jared Yates Sexton who coined the term toxic masculinity and has written a book called The Man They Wanted Me to Be, Toxic Masculinity and a Crisis of Our Own Making. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information is available about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfer at carthage.edu/admissions.